When I was a kid growing up in Jersey, anybody who was a hoot or really funny or something, we'd call them a riot. Ladies and gents, this guy's a riot in more ways than one. Bob Dylan.
Episode of Pod Dylan, the show that celebrates the work of Bob Dylan, one song at a time. Proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. I'm your host, the freewheeling Rob Kelly, and our pal Patrick Butlinger is back. Hi, Pat.
Hey, Rob. What's up?
This is very, very cool. This is a very, very special, a lot of varies here, very special episode that I brought Pat in for because I really wanted to talk about this, and this is so much fun. Now, in previous episodes where Pat has been here, we've talked about, of course, individual recorded songs, and we've talked about live songs.
Right.
This time, we're combining both those things. We are here to talk about a very special set of recordings that Bob did when he appeared on the March 22nd, 1984 episode of Late Night with David Letterman. Now, to give everybody a little bit of context about this performance, for those who don't remember, in 1984, David Letterman had been on the air just a little over a year and a half, a little under 2 years, actually. And he was the hippest thing on television. He was so hip that at one point, NBC came to him, and they were ready to cancel Saturday Night Live. And the only reason, the reason they were thinking they were going to be able to do that is because they came to Letterman and said, would you like to do a Saturday show, which would be longer, more variety, just a bigger budget show. Like, that'll take the place of Saturday Night Live. That's how hip Letterman was. And Letterman, to his credit, realized trying to replace Saturday Night Live was asking for trouble, and simply trying to produce a show of that scale every week would be too taxing on his crew. So we turned them down.
Right.
SNL lived on, and that's how hip Letterman was in 1984. So him getting Bob Dylan in 1984 was a huge booking, even though Dylan was coming out of probably the worst commercial part of his career. He had really done himself a series of body blows in terms of his commercial appeal. Not talking artistically, just commercial.
Right.
He had really sort of done a number on himself with the so-called Born Again records. And so he was kind of at a low ebb in 1984. He was coming off of the Infidels album, which people had really liked. But nevertheless, it was still a big deal to get Bob Dylan on a TV show. Bob Dylan, I think his previous TV appearance was on the Johnny Cash show in like 1969.
I believe that's true.
He was on SNL in 1979. But I mean, in terms of like him being like just the one guest or something, it was still a huge, huge deal to get him on. So, and Letterman, you could sense Letterman knew it. In the intros that Letterman has, which you'll hear in a moment, you could hear like how just excited Letterman is to have Bob Dylan on. And apparently Bob reached out to his son around the time and wanted to look into sort of new music. And he was looking into like the sort of post-punk scene, the L.A. post-punk scene, the new wave scene. And his sons, apparently, I guess Jacob and Jesse, took him to a bunch of cool bands, went to a bunch of concerts. Imagine that, going with the old man. You know, like, oh man, let's go check out a Blondie show. There's Bob Dylan sitting there. And apparently Dylan was very impressed with all this and liked a lot of it. So he contacted three musicians, J.J. Holiday, Charlie Quintana, and Tony Marsico. Holiday is a guitarist, Quintana was a drummer, and Marsico was a bassist. And he asked them to rehearse with him for as yet unspecified reason. So they went and holed up in some house somewhere and did a bunch of recording and a bunch of rehearsing.
Right.
And apparently they did something like 50 songs.
Right.
Which is amazing. Now, that stuff does exist in bootleg form, all those rehearsals. Have you ever heard any of that stuff, Pat?
I got to be honest with you. That's news to me. I didn't know that they recorded it. So I'll definitely be taking a look to hear that because you should keep going. But, I mean, this is an interesting this is a group of musicians that I wouldn't say that Bob would normally associate with or you would think he would be jamming with, you know?
Right, exactly. Yeah, these were young guys. These were sort of hip gunslinger kind of guys.
Right.
The two of them, Marsico and Quintana, were actually part of a band, an L.A. punk band called The Plugs. And so they rehearsed something like 50 songs. I have a bootleg of at least a couple of the recordings, and we'll get to that later on in the show. And Dylan didn't tell them why they were doing this. He just was rehearsing. And then at one moment he springs on them, "Oh, hey, we're going to play Letterman." Okay.
Right. And they like loved that. Yeah. They were like, "We love David Letterman. He's like the coolest guy on TV." So guys, next week.
Yeah, exactly. They fly out to New York, and apparently, as you mentioned, the three guys apparently loved it because they were getting like this huge per diem and we're put up in a nice hotel. These were guys used to living in the back of vans, you know, and worrying about their equipment getting stolen. And all of a sudden they're on a major NBC television show. So they're going on Letterman. They rehearse. Apparently in the rehearsals, which have been, which were taped and are available on YouTube, the rehearsals are available. That's how big a deal this was, that they taped the rehearsals. Yep. And they ran through something like 30 songs there, all the covers and different versions of things. And again, Dylan was sort of not really giving them any idea of what they were going to record or whatever. So anyway, the next day comes along. They're ready to tape the show. Letterman introduces Dylan. And Dylan was not going to be a guest in terms of being interviewed. He was just, he's just there as a musician. So what does Bob do? He comes out and he starts with a cover of a song called "Don't Start Me Talking." So for a guy who's not going to be interviewed, he's singing "Don't Start Me Talking" by Sonny Boy Williamson, a song that the band had not rehearsed at any point.
That is hysterical. Well, I think I thought I heard that they'd rehearsed it like at the house in California a couple of times, and he called it Sonny Boy or something.
Oh, really? Okay, maybe I'm misremembering that. Okay,
but I don't think they'd rehearsed it and played it in a long time.
Right.
Like because you can kind of tell. So this is a really cool and kind of funny story, right? Because first off, the whole clip is hysterical because it's 1984. They're all wearing like black suits and skinny ties. I mean, they look like such an LA punk rock band, you know, circa that time. Letterman looks crazy young. I mean, I'd forgotten how, and it was right, Rob. I mean, I'm a little younger than you, but I remember him being kind of like, if you were like a smarmy, sardonic, you know, the really cool, funny people were really into Letterman, you know, and he had this whole like kind of detached, you know, thing, and he was just I was like 7 when this happened, so this was like way above me. I didn't get David Letterman until I was probably like 13, you know, but I feel like it was really interesting is that they come out and they start with "Don't Stop Me Talking," which is like one of these old blues songs, which I'm sure that Bob, you know, probably heard and played 1,000 times Village, and these guys of course are like, oh, okay, but in their defense, they're actually all really, really good musicians. So they pick it up pretty quickly.
Yep.
And it's a really good, it's like a real bluesy rock and roll song. And, you know, I just think they do a great job with it. And his voice is actually, I think, pretty strong on that. You know, it sounds really like haggard and, you know, "Don't Stop Me Talking," you know. it's really cool. It's definitely, but you're right. Like, what a weird thing to start off with. By the way, a song he'd never recorded before.
Right.
You know, like, if you didn't know, Letterman said something like, "Oh, here's the new album, Infidels," and then they play a song that's not even on that album.
Right.
That wasn't kind of the typical corporate, you know, rock thing to do in 1984. You know, if he had gotten some other artist, you know, I think they would have played the latest single or something.
Push the hit. Yeah, push whatever the single was. But it's Bob Dylan, and so he does what he wants. And so, we're going to play the song in its entirety. And the reason we're going to be able to do that is because people have asked me on the show before, why don't you play the whole song? Wouldn't it be better to hear the whole song? And, of course, it would be better to hear the whole song when whatever song we're talking about on the show. I don't do that for two reasons. One, I don't want to get sued. And two, I don't want to hear from Dylan's lawyers. And two, I want you to go buy the song. I want you to hear this. And if you have not familiar with it, I want you to go. That's why I have the iTunes links in the show notes. I want you to go and buy the song. Now, when for many years on YouTube, you could get recordings of Dylan songs, the studio recordings from people that uploaded them and then just put in, you know, like a video of the album cover or whatever. You've seen all those things.
Yep.
But when Bob showed up on YouTube in terms of creating a YouTube channel, all that stuff disappeared because now, you know, of course he wants you to hear the official version from his YouTube page, which he of course has every right to do. So all those versions have been scrubbed from YouTube, but all of these Letterman performances are still on YouTube.
Right.
So for whatever weird, like, legal thing, I guess, that they can't you know, they can't take them down or whatever. I don't really know. But they're all still available. So I'm feeling secure in the knowledge that I can play these full out audio. So we're gonna play the opening track from Don't Start Me Talking. This is Letterman, the three guys. They are at full gallop right out of the gate. And then Pat and I are going to come back, talk about it a little, and move on to the next song. So here is Don't Start Me Talking.
Well, that's her kind of beauty shop, man. Gone off his hide. She said, go back, boy. Keep it inside. Don't stop me talking. I'll tell everything I know. Well, stop here signifying. Somebody got to go. Tells me that a $2 put on the beauty shop. She said, no, baby. Boy, I can't stop. They said, come back, maybe next year. Well, don't you know, but you done here. Don't stop me talking, I tell everything I know. Yeah, stop this thing, I'm crying. Somebody's got to go. Alive. She said, no, honey, I can't go for that. No, that you met cause I don't, can't stand it up. Don't stop me talking, I tell everything I know. You better stop this signifying. Somebody's up to you.
What a beginning. What a kick-ass way. I mean, it's almost like, I don't know, you know, God, it's such a fool's errand to try and guess what's in the man's head at any given point. But it almost feels like it's like, I got something to prove here. I really want to show you guys I'm not some aging, you know, novelty act. I'm alive. And the band really seems completely in simpatico with him. I mean, they are a tight little unit.
Yeah, so just like a couple of things that always really jumped out. First off, that I noticed as a guitar player, they're not using picks. You know, they're playing with their fingers, which I think gives it which for a blues song is really tough to do. You know, because it's so much strumming and you're really trying to get that rhythm going. So I always thought that was kind of cool. And I totally 1,000% agree. I think he, you know, like you said, there's a lot of context to this. I mean, he was probably at that point. He was not a guy that was really – he was played on, like, classic rock radio and maybe oldie stations, you know? He wasn't really having, like, hits on MTV and stuff, right? And I feel like by coming out with this young, you know, kind of gunslinging punk rock band and opening up with some old blues song, I think he's sending a statement to everyone that, like, Bob Dylan's going to do whatever he's going to do, but he is an artist first and foremost, and that he does – you know, he follows his muse. And, you know, I think it was a really cool way of opening up the show and also kind of like, you know, letting everyone know, like, you know, this is what I can do. Right. I play songs, you know, I have an edge. He's different. You know, he's always gone back to this. He's his love of the blues and old American music. And that's, you know, again, that wasn't the most commercial sound. Right. And that's what he opened up with. But, you know, I feel like it kind of works with Letterman, too. You know what I mean? Like, Letterman's show was a place where a lot of really cool, hip, kind of underground rock bands were playing, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I feel like, you know, I think Bob felt more connected to those kids and those kind of guys, you know, like R.E.M. and Robin Hitchcock and things like that than he did maybe to what was then the prevent, like where he was supposed to be, you know? I mean, I think he was like absolutely like signaling with that opening that this is, you know, that I'm not going to be, I'm not following trends really, you know, because I've always followed my own thing. But this is the kind of music I really love, and it's always going to be the blues. And, you know, and also, like, let's face it, like, who the heck had ever heard of Sonny Boy Williamson?
Yeah.
It's just great, you know, and I love the fact that, like, again, it's like he's kind of teaching you something, you know, like, this is the roots of all the stuff come from this, you know, and this is a song that's great. And like you said, don't start me talking. Don't ask Bob Dylan to do anything other than sing. You know,
right, he's not there. Yeah, he's not there to give interviews. He's there to blast. And this, the beat of this thing, it's just such a high energy performance, and you're just so not expecting it that it's just like whoa. And you said when they cut back to Letterman, he looks so delighted. He looks visibly delighted. And you know, as you said, Letterman was all about the ironic distance and the snark and the idea of just. That this was a parody of a talk show. This was nothing.
Right.
Nothing was taken seriously. They would take audio of their own guests and fidget with it, or put in funny graphics over a guest to sort of undercut what they were saying if they didn't like. You know, I mean, the whole thing was just an anti-talk show. And coming as it was, as it did, right after Johnny Carson, which was the epitome of the talk show.
Right.
You know, and that's why Letterman was the biggest thing. It said you can imagine that Dylan really took to that. He probably watched the show and was like, "This, I like this guy, so here he is." So yeah, don't start talking. So they do a commercial break, and then Letterman comes back, and you can hear the crowd, people just like clapping wildly, and he says, "Okay." And he goes up to Dylan and he says, "What are you going to play, Bob?" And Bob says, "License to Kill." Okay, we're going to be License to Kill. So License to Kill is actually from Infidels, the record that Bob was there to ostensibly promote. Now on the album, it's a slow song. Some people have said it's almost turgid. I wouldn't agree with that. I actually like License to Kill quite a bit. This song is, you know, got a lot of heavy stuff in it. And as I said, on the album, it's slow and methodical. And of course here, bango. You know, it's played in the same level of just super up-tempo, just on the side of punk rocky kind of thing. So here's the second song. This is License to Kill.
Thank you, folks. What are you going to do now, Bob?
License to Kill.
License to Kill. Ladies and gentlemen, Bob Dylan.
Yeah.
sky. Leave the stone unturned. Maybe an actor in a plot. That'd be all that you got. Tell your errors, you clearly learn. Man, he worships.
License to Kill.
So it's funny that this was the second song, because here's my overall feeling. I think Infidels is an okay record. I'm not huge on it, you know. I think that I've told you before, I actually think some of that the Christian born again records are actually really good. The songs are really good.
Yeah,
and I really really love that stuff. And I'm not a Christian born again Christian or anything, but.
No, there's some tremendous music on those records. Absolutely.
Yeah, I think those records are great. So then this album came out, and this was kind of his return to form, right? So Bob was kind of moving past the Christian phase and was getting back into writing, you know, songs. I actually think the lyrics on the album are incredible. I just think that the production of it is a little weird, and it's very glossy, and it sounds and it's probably because Mark Knopfler produced it. It sounds like kind of bad Dire Straits. So when I heard License to Kill on the album, I thought it was okay. It didn't jump out to me, but I actually think I like this version better. I like the groove of it. I like the way that they're moving. And then I think then when you really get into it, you're like, this is a great Bob Dylan song with like all kinds of great images. I've always been kind of weirded out by that line about man has invented his doom. First up was touching the moon. Mm-hmm. And I was like, at first I was like, oh, is he just rhyming doom and moon because they're an easy rhyme? But I've heard people say, well, you know, he's still very, you know, no one knows what he believes religiously, really, but that he's always actually had this big aversion to, like, technology. And so I was like, oh, is that like him kind of saying, like, oh, I don't really, like, believe in the space program and stuff, you know?
You know, it's yeah, he did. He took a lot of grief for that line.
Yeah.
In fact, there's an interview he did with Rolling Stone at the time with Kurt Loder, where Kurt Loder, like, specifically went after him about that line. And
yeah.
My interpretation of that line is not meant to be literal in
right.
that to me, Bob is saying we're worrying about something so far removed from us while we're not dealing with the problems that we have right in front of us. That's how I take it. And I would say that is true. I mean, to me, I would, you know, we think about how, you know, we're worrying about building you know, robots that can, you know, that can serve us food, but we're not as concerned about, you know, kids that are go hungry.
Right.
That sort of thing. And, you know, I mean, you could take, yeah, you could be, it could be that Bob at the time was maybe more of a Luddite. He's not now. Now I think he's Captain Digital when he's introduced to all these different things. But maybe at the time, yeah, he was probably still struggling a little with, you know, is he an oldies act? Is he struggling not to be that? you know, right. when a lot of his compatriots were sort of falling into that trap. And so, yeah, maybe at the time he meant it literally, but when I hear that line, I take it as you're worrying about something so far ahead, so far away, and you're not dealing with what's in front of you right now. So that, at least that's how I take it. But yeah, I mean, the song version, again, we're not playing it here on this episode. The song version, you said you can find it on YouTube and listen to sample on iTunes and stuff. It's slow and I like it, but this one is just, again, it's just really punchy. And the whole refrain of "there's a woman on my block," she just sits there as the night grows still. She says, "Who's going to take away his license to kill?" That's a great refrain.
It's awesome. It's a great refrain. And, you know, I think for me, like, hearing this version a couple years ago, I actually really grew to like the song more, because now I get it. I'm like, oh, you know, first off, that's a great image, right? The woman on the block. I hear that and I see, like, if you grew up in a neighborhood, you know, where people hung out on the streets, you know, in the summertime, you know, and there was always kind of like that older guy or older woman, you know, that was watching everything that was going on and, you know, was the one that knew all the gossip and everything. And I'm like, you know, so that's like kind of the image I think he gives you. And I think really you're right. You're touching on a really important thing. I think this song is actually really about the fact that, you know, men, you know, man, and I think he's using man as mankind, right?
You know, right.
He's not talking about someone specific, but that we're not living our best lives, you know, and that we tend, you know, it's violent. There's a lot of violence. There's a lot of, you know, disregard for the truth, you know, and a lot of kind of self-love, you know. You know, Bob's a really deep guy. I mean, he couches it in, you know, these lyrics. But this is a really good example of a song about, you know, the kind of the worst aspects of people, right? And of course, the woman on the block being like, well, who's going to take away that license? You know what I mean? And Bob always asks questions, you know? So, you know, and I think I really like this version because I think that, first off, I kind of am like, you know, I kind of wish Bob had done an album with these guys, you know?
We'll get to that. Yeah, we will get part of the heartbreaking nature of this performance is something we'll get to when we're done. Yeah, so, yeah.
Totally. But it's just, I think this version really, like, it's a great way to get into this song. At least for me it was, you know, to really appreciate what he was singing about. And also, like, again, like, how cool is that he's singing this on David Letterman in 1984? This is a song about, like, really heavy things, you know? And, you know, asking these questions. And again, a great vocal. Let's not forget the harmonica, you know?
Right, yeah, where he loses the harmonica that they gave him on stage was the wrong one.
Yep.
And so he goes and he literally just walks off the stage.
Yeah.
Until he finds the right one and the band just keeps playing and they're just like, okay, let's just keep, you know, I'm like, that's amazing. And that's, I had heard this story once from Eric Clapton, not from Eric Clapton, like he told me correctly. I saw an interview with Eric Clapton where he said that he was on stage with Dylan once at like some massive concert, but like a 200,000 people or something. And it was some song that that Clapton didn't know the chord changes to.
Yeah.
And he was like, Bob, blah, 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 blah. And Bob turned his back on the audience and for like the next 45 seconds just taught Eric the chord changes. And Eric Clapton was like, this is a guy who literally just turned his back on 200,000 people. He's like, that's the nerve of this guy. That's how much of a backbone he's got that he can just do that. And here's a guy on national television. We're here to see Bob Dylan, not these three punk dudes. And Bob's just like, I'm just going to wander off stage for a minute until I find the right harmonica.
Well, I love that. I love that because I feel like that just goes reinforced to what I've been telling people for years, which is like, he's not in love, like, he's not in love with all the trappings of, like, the rock star, you know? I think for him, he's like, he was there, he was like, I'm here to do a job, I'm here to, you know, kind of do some songs and promote this record. But I think deep down, he's really like, you know, the reason he had these guys, and he's all about spontaneity and stuff, I think he grabs that, they hand him that harmonica, he hears that it's wrong, because he blows a little bit, right?
Right.
Like, you can tell it's, like, not the right key. And I think he was literally like, okay, I got to go get the right one, you know, because I want to play harmonica on this song. And I think he's just not like one of the, I don't think he was going to turn around and be like, you're fired, or, you know, he was just going to do what he had to do, which was like to play, you know, get the harmonica.
Yep.
But yeah, I think that's really cool. And I think it also illustrates, I think too, and this is hard for people to kind of, if you watch like Letterman today, or there is no Letterman now, but you know, Fallon or some of these things, like it's so rehearsed, you know, and it's so, it's so rehearsed to like with an inch of his life, and there's never a bum note, and no one makes, you know, and people lip sync and all that kind of stuff. And Bob didn't do that. I mean, this was like a live, and Letterman at the time, that's not what you did. You just showed up and played.
Yep.
So I actually think it just speaks to how, like, this was a true live performance, you know? The harmonica was wrong, so he had to go get the right one, you know? And then he plays a really nice harmonica at the end of the song, you know, and the band keeps the song going. And it just, you're right, it's got a really cool, it's a faster version than the album, but it's still kind of it's got that kind of pace, you know? It's not, like, super fast, and I think the words really come through.
Yeah, so. His diction is very clear. And, I mean, you were talking about, this is a pretty heavy song to play on a national television, you know, setting. I mean, listen to this verse and see if it doesn't sound familiar with somebody we know. Now he worships at the altar of a stagnant pool, and when he sees his reflection, he's fulfilled. Oh, man is opposed to fair play. He wants it all, and he wants it his way.
Yep.
So, yep. Okay, Bob.
I mean, yeah.
You just pull that song out in concert now, and you got a surefire
winner.
You're going
to get a standing ovation.
Yeah, so this is a real heavy song, and here he is playing it on a comedy show, but it fits because, again, Letterman kind of gave his performers that room to sort of be who they were, and this is Bob being who he is. So they wrap up License to Kill. The crowd is going nuts. It's one of those things where the crowd is so loud you can hear the slight distortion in the mics picking it up because they're just not used to picking up that level of noise. So they go to commercial, and before they go to commercial, Letterman isn't sure whether Bob's going to play again. And he's like, are we going to do a third song? Yeah, okay. Like, he doesn't know what's happening.
I know.
Then he says, okay, we're going to come back, and so they go to commercial. So then they come back from commercial. And Letterman, just again, you watch it on YouTube, he looks so delighted when he says, once again, here's Bob Dylan. And again, the crowd goes absolutely crazy. And that is when Dylan breaks into the third song, which is the lead track from Infidels, which is Joker Man.
Freedom just around the corner for you.
So of the three performances, they're all terrific, but this is my favorite one. What about you?
This is my favorite too. Absolutely. Let's just start. So actually, I have a funny story about this. So the very first Bob Dylan concert I ever went and saw was in 1993, and he played the Orpheum Theater here in downtown Boston. And this was the very first song he opened up with.
Really?
And, yep. And he had probably not played it for a couple years at that point. And I was not super familiar with it at the time, you know, but I kind of knew the chorus, you know. And he you know, it's funny. I actually have a tape of that show. I should go back and listen to it. But on Infidels, it's the opening song on Infidels. It's actually, I think, a really good song on Infidels. It's one of my one of my favorite songs on that record, if not my favorite, you know. And I think this first off, like, the lyrics of this one are totally, like, again, like, super, I mean, they're super heavy. I think you could probably apply some of the thoughts we just had about License to Kill again, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Joker Man is really about, it's interesting, right? Because it's kind of like this Christ-like figure, or kind of like religious leader type, you know? But, you know, it's like, he's kind of saying, I mean, there's a lot of just interesting lyrics in this song, which I don't always quite understand what he's reaching for. It also has one of the, it's very strange, Bob Dylan doing kind of like a pop chorus, you know, Joker Man dance to the Nightingale tune, you know. I mean, I was like, oh, this sounds like kind of like something that would be on the radio, which, you know, he's not big on choruses, you know. A lot of his stuff is a little bit different, you know. But I think this version is awesome. I mean, they really kick it into high gear here. And he's just going for it. You know, they just go for it. And they just, it's like the drums are really pounding, and there's like some real good like guitar work. And again, it's just, it takes a song that if you listen to it on Infidels, it's kind of this slow, almost reggae-ish type song.
Right.
And it turns it into like a straight ahead rock and roll song. And it's great, you know? And it's by far the best performance of the night. I mean, I think it's got a really great chorus. And he really just, you know, he sings it, and the band is just perfect. And there's actually a point, I think, like, where the bassist there, his, like, he's, like, bobbing his neck along, and he's got, you know, like, he's, like, they can feel that the groove is really hitting, you know? And I just love it. And, again, he's a harmonica, you know? And, yeah, it's awesome, man. They did a great job with that. And what great song to kind of end it with, you know? So if you, like, didn't have Infidels at that point and you saw this, you were probably like, this is going to be awesome.
Yeah, right. I got to go out and get this record. Like, oh, yeah. Holy crap.
Yeah. And then you're like, oh, this is okay, but it's a little different, you know? But, yeah, Joker Man's a great song. I mean, it's one of my favorite Bob Dylan songs, and I just love this version of it. I think this was so cool, and I think this, again, is something he does a lot, where he will kind of play a song one way on the record. Because, again, you know, this is how he does not record like most people. Like, he does not, you know, endlessly edit and change things and go back and fix, you know, mistakes. That's not how Bob Dylan works, you know. So they probably did it in the studio one way, and that was just the way he felt like doing it that day, you know. And then when he's with these three guys on Letterman, this is the way he wanted to do Joker Man, you know. And I think that's why it sounds really different. But I also think it gives it a certain kind of punch. And I think, therefore, it makes the song kind of stronger. And, you know, I just, it's cool. I mean, hey, again, like, that was, how cool is it that, like, David Letterman was like, hey, do you want to hang around and do three songs
yeah.
in the middle of my show? Which is, you know, when he usually hangs around with, wasn't Liberace on this show or something like that?
Yeah, Liberace was on the same show. Apparently they hung out, Bob and Liberace hung out backstage, which, why is there no photo of that meeting? That's very funny.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, the original, I mean, even for Dylan songs, this is very lyrically dense. You know, standing on the waters, casting your bread, while the eyes of the idol with the iron head are glowing. Distant ship sailing into the mist. You were born with a snake in both of your fists while a hurricane was blowing. Freedom just around the corner for you, but if the truth's so far off, what good will it do?
Right.
This is, yeah, on the, as you mentioned, on the original album, it's got a reggae beat. It's kind of this loping, you know, mid-tempo thing. And then this is just a kick in the pants. This is just a
right.
boom, 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 boom. And, right. you know, I wasn't into Dylan in 1984. I hadn't, you know, I was aware of him, but I wasn't a fan or right. knew anything much about him. But I remembered hearing this at some point not too long after I started getting into him. And it was really the beginning of my education with him of how he can transform something that already sounds pretty good into something completely different. Because, yeah, I mean, I would imagine that if I was a casual Bob Dylan fan and I heard this performance and I bought Infidels because of it, I might be a little disappointed. I'd be like, yeah. Where's this? Wait a minute. What, you know, what's this reggae song? And the one funny story I think I have regarding to Joker Man is I saw an interview with Wyclef Jean from the Fugees, and he talked, because of course he did that video for his song Gone Till November, which Dylan is in. Because there's a line about I'm chilling like Bob Dylan or something. I forget the exact line, but Dylan is literally in the video, and apparently when he was in I guess high school, his brother had gone off to college, and the brother comes back for Christmas or something with Infidels, and he gives it to his brother gives it to him, and Wyclef Jean I guess at the time was what are you buying this old white dude's record, what's this about. And he said literally his first response was, what is this? And then he heard the album and he went, what is this? And he became a fan at that point. He had no idea that this was what Bob Dylan was. And he became a fan of it because he said, this song is so amazingly dense. And yeah, it is very unclear as to what we're talking about. It does seem to be some sort of Christ-like figure who seems to be self-sacrificing, but also seems to sort of walk through the world causing a lot of trouble. For himself and for the world. I mean, he could be talking about himself or talking about somebody else. I mean, there's endless references here. There's the Book of Leviticus and Deuteronomy. It's a shadowy world. Skies are slippery gray. A woman just gave birth to a prince today and dressed him in scarlet. He'll put the priest in his pocket, put a blade to the heat, take the motherless children off the street, and place them at the feet of a harlot. And so here's Bob doing this super up-tempo version of this, and he raps it again. It has another great harmonica burst, and then it ends with Letterman coming out on stage, and he puts his arm around Bob, or not his arm around him, but he sort of touches him by the shoulder, and you hear Letterman say, could you guys make it every Thursday night? And Bob goes, yeah. okay. And I was just like, what an extraordinary set of performances. And part of the reason that we wanted to talk about this, aside from the fact we just think it's great, is the frustrating nature of being a Bob Dylan fan is because after this was over, everybody knew how well it went. Everybody. Yeah. Everybody just said, holy crap, that was amazing. And Dylan apparently told the three of them, Marisco, Quintana, and what's his name? I'm forgetting his name now. Hold on one second.
Not Kale or something.
Dylan told the three guys, Holiday, Quintana, and Marisco, that basically you'll be getting another call from me. And they were like, we're set. We're going to be Bob Dylan's backup band. And the call never came. The call never came. Now, one of them, I forget which one, I think it was Quintana, ended up rehearsing with Bob for a tour later on, but none of them ever got the nod to do anything other than this. And later on, Dylan went on a big tour with a kind of little more typical band, and that resulted in the album Real Live, which to most Dylan fans is a pretty disappointing live album. It pretty much sounds like what you'd expect a mid-arena rock album to sound like in 1984. Yep. And that's the part where you're just, as a Dylan fan, you really have to get used to the man's sometimes very frustrating moves, because imagine what an album of this would have sounded like.
Yeah.
This would have been, I mean, when you think about the fact that it was right after Infidels that Dylan headed into what almost all Dylan fans agree is the worst period of his professional career. the Real Live, Empire Burlesque, Knocked Out Loaded, Down in the Groove, Dylan in the Dead, series, which are his worst records all in a row. And here, imagine what a new studio album might have sounded like with just these guys. That thing would have been amazing, but it didn't happen. So all we have are these three songs to go by of what it could have sounded like.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it's probably the only time in his entire career that I've always felt like this was the wrong turn for him.
Yeah.
Because I feel like if he had stuck with these guys, because first off, let's just say Charlie Quintana, who's the drummer in this group, went on to play with Social Distortion, who's one of my favorite bands. I was into that whole kind of punk roots rock scene in the 90s, and I actually saw them play a couple months ago. But he was playing the drums. But
was he really?
Yeah, but I didn't get to approach him or anything like that.
Wow, that's cool. That's really
cool. Yeah, yeah, and you know, but I feel like if you listen to the, like a lot of those guys that he was talking, that his kids were turning him on to, you know, those groups, you know, I think would have made they would have, that would have been where Bob should have gone, kind of, you know, he should have worked with some of these guys or in this particular group of guys, because, you know, these guys were playing rock music, but they also were, you know, they're into the blues and country music and all the stuff he loves, you know, all the stuff that Bob Dylan really loves, and but I also feel like it would have given him a little bit of kick in the pants, you know, and would have kept the music good, you know, because I feel like though I like all those records you just named, I just can't. I just have such a hard time listening to them. They're just so bad, and they're so 80s, and they're just so dated, and, you know, and you're just kind of like, you listen to them, and you're like, oh, God. I mean, there's great songs in there. I mean, Bob knows how to write great songs, but they just get watered down with these terrible productions and synthesizers. I mean, you know, so I would have said, I think it would have been really great if they had kind of, if he'd called them, you know, and then, you know, that, and clearly they could keep up with him, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
You know, he starts the song, and they were managed to, you know, they managed to make it, they jump right into it. So I think it would have been really great to kind of do that. And I feel like, you know, that didn't happen. And what did he do right after this? I mean, he ended up, yeah, he started doing like arena tours and stuff. And then with Petty and, you know, it's just a weird time in his career. But this, you know, a lot of people, you know, you and I both know as Dylan fans, a lot of people kind of go Bob Dylan in the '80s and they just kind of roll their eyes, you know, like that's
right.
You just want to kind of erase that whole period. But it feels like if you before, Oh Mercy, if I point to anything in the '80s, to me, this is one of the kind of like, this was a bright spot, you know, this was something that was really, really well done. He took songs that I thought were pretty good, but I didn't particularly love the way they sound on the record, and made them songs that I would have been like, that's a Dylan classic, you know?
Yep.
And, so to me, this was always kind of like the brightest spot before probably his darkest period in terms of just, you know, just bad music and bad tours and
street
guys, you know,
and stuff like that. Yeah. And Dylan himself looks really engaged. I mean, the music is tough and no frills, and it's the kind of thing that you would think that Bob would really like, you know? And it is kind of confounding that this didn't result in anything more, but, you know, at least we have this. And this is the kind of thing where, like, I'll sort of forget that it's on YouTube, and then I'm on YouTube for some other reason. And because of my searches, it's always popping up in those sidebars of like, oh, do you want to listen? I'm like, oh, yeah, I do want to listen to this. So I play it again. And then it'll say, do you want to play the next one? Yes, I do. And I play it again. And so I'll end up listening to all three. And, of course, as we're sort of wrapping up here, Dylan ended up having a very nice relationship with David Letterman. He appeared on Letterman Show in 1993 to promote World Gone Wrong, where he ended up singing Forever Young, which, of course, does not promote World Gone Wrong in the slightest. He was Letterman's final musical guest just last year, where he sang something off of Fallen Angels as a sort of nice way to say goodbye. The night we sang, he sang The Night We Called It a Day.
He did.
For Letterman's last thing. And he does appear as a gag in an episode somewhere around 95 or 96. There's a moment where after the monologue, Letterman would always turn and say, you know, now here's say a warm round of applause for our lead of our band, our, you know, Paul Schaefer. And he would turn to Paul Schaefer, and Paul Schaefer would get an applause, and Letterman walks over to the desk. Well, in this bit, he turns to Paul Schaefer, and Paul Schaefer's not there. And he's like, where'd Paul go? And everybody's like, where's Paul? And he goes, wait a minute, I know where Paul is. And so the camera follows Letterman out the door,
right,
down the street, across the street, up a block to the Roseland Ballroom. And we got to the shot of Paul Schaefer leaning over a keyboard playing, and we look and see that he's rehearsing with Dylan. And Letterman comes and grabs Paul, and he's like, Paul, we're doing a show. What are you doing? And sorry. And then Letterman like waves to Bob, like, sorry, Bob. And Bob just kind of gives him a nod. And then they walk off. And that's all you ever see of Dylan in the show. So clearly Bob and Letterman had a good relationship, because it's the only show he's ever done other than the 79 appearance in Saturday Night Live. He's never done Saturday Night Live since in the 35 years since that show's been on. So, you know, will he ever do another show? I don't know. I don't know if he's, you know, even clued into the Seth Meyers or any of those guys anymore. But clearly him and Letterman had a good relationship.
Well, Letterman was clearly a huge fan, and he's talked about that a lot. That, you know, I mean, and Letterman is of that generation where Dylan, you know, was a huge force, you know,
right.
In the 1960s. And I think they clearly had a, you know, they're both got that kind of Midwestern, you know, Bob certainly can be a very detached guy, you know? Yes. And it's interesting you should talk about that because, you know, now that I think about it, it's like he's probably made, what, like half a dozen appearances on TV in his entire career?
Yep.
You know, he's not he just does not live in that world, you know? He's just not that kind of – I mean, and that – I think, you know, to be honest with you, it's so funny because now I just remember that Dharma and Greg, and the Wyclef video. It's like the reason that it's so weird and everyone just kind of smiles is because he just doesn't do that, you know? Yeah. He's such a he's just not that. He's just not that kind of guy, you know. I mean, when most people put out a new record, you know, they do that. You know, they go and play a Letterman or a Fallon or, you know, whatever the equivalent is today. But, you know, in those days, it was basically Leno and Letterman, Saturday Night Live. You know.
Yep.
And yeah, he never really did that, and he's never kind of gone that way. And but this was definitely, to me, this is always kind of it's both a high point of the '80s for him, but kind of a disappointment because I really feel like those kind of groups, you know, X and the DOA and the Plugs and, you know, the Blasters, you know, that's like, to me, like that would have been great if Bob Dylan worked with those guys, you know, because I feel like they would have really made some great records. And, you know, those guys, Dwight Yoakam, all those guys, you know, they all understood what he was into because they were all into that stuff too. And, you know, it was a while, you know, because it's just the next 5-6 years of his career, really, until Oh Mercy, right? It's 5 years. It's just so bad. I mean, the record is so bad. And then Oh Mercy comes along, and that clearly, you know, and that was the other thing too. He started to find it again after that, I think. But
yeah,
and then obviously we both think he's been doing great since. But this was something really cool. Thanks for suggesting this. You know, given everything that's been happening in the country the last couple of weeks, Jokerman and License to Kill, it actually made me want to go back and listen to more of Infidels. You know, because I'd forgotten. You know, there's a lot of good songs on there about this kind of stuff. You know, the thing about Bob, right? Just don't follow leaders, you know? And, you know, there's a sense, you know, I don't know. It's strange that he would play these two songs. I mean, I get it that they were from Infidels, you know, but it's still kind of cool thing to do, to basically get up on a TV show, you know, and play some songs, but do them in a different style. And I think Bob always, ultimately, at the end of the day, he follows the muse. And so I feel like he probably saw these guys had a great performance and probably felt like maybe we can't top that. And I don't want to necessarily go down that road. You know, I don't want to stay stuck. And, and so I guess they've never heard from him ever since.
No, no, it's not.
And frustrating too. Be like, hey, I hung out with this guy for like a year, played with him all the time. And then like, that was it.
Blew the roof off the doors of this place and on national television and then never again. So
yeah.
As a final sort of, piece of evidence, not that we need it anymore, of how great this band was for Dylan. We're going to play out this episode with a song from these rehearsals, because these rehearsals have made it out as bootlegs, as they do. And now the song that I have is just an instrumental. You don't hear Dylan at all, but it's him and the band playing, and it's this wonderful instrumental that they find this amazing groove. And they just play the hell out of it. And even though it's an instrumental, and so, you know, you would think, you know, in a Bob Dylan instrumental, that seems to be a contradiction in terms. The reason you're listening to it is because it's Bob Dylan. You don't want to hear an instrumental. But I love this instrumental. And every time I hear it, I'm like, God, if Bob had just put some words to this,
it
would have been a classic. So that's how we're gonna wrap up is Bob and the Plugs playing in their little room or where they were playing just before the Letterman appearance. And before we get to that, Pat, I got to say, man, thank you so much for coming back on. It's always so much fun to talk to you. And when we talked about, you know, you coming back on, we were first going to do License to Kill, and then we said, well, we got to talk about the Letterman version. And then it shifted to, let's just talk about all the Letterman versions, because this is just like such a Rosetta Stone for Dylan fans, this particular set of performances.
Oh, yeah.
So thank you, man. I always love having you on the show.
Thanks, Rob. It's always a pleasure. I always love doing this.
All right. Thank you so much, guys. As always, if you want to hear back episodes of the show or this or any of our other great shows, go to the website, which is fireandwaterpodcast.com. And you can continue the conversation about Dylan, all things Dylan, on our Twitter feed, which is pod_Dylan. So thanks, everybody, for listening. And we will see you later. Bye. The